personally. What was the magazine called again? I read it.
Yeah, it's...
I don't know, but what was it?
It's Slug Magazine. It stands for Salt Lake Underground.
Hey listeners, I'm JP and this is Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug, an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, is one of the oldest independent publications in the United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action sports, and subculture. On today's show, we'll be talking with local writer Jake Black, going back to the archives with This Will Destroy You, debuting some new local music coming out this week, and sticking it to the man with Levi Rounds. Let's get things started. Local writer Jake Black has been penning material for television shows since 2008. Black began interning on Smallville before moving on to shows such as Ben 10, Batman the Brave and the Bold, and Chaotic. He's also taken his skills to comic books and written issues for titles such as Supergirl, Ender's Game, and Tales of the TMNT. In 2008, Black was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma, which he defeated after nearly 2 years of treatment. Since then, his family has been struggling to pay off the ever-increasing amount of medical debt left behind, which the Utah writing community has been trying to help whittle down with comic book fundraisers and an online charity. Slug Magazine writer Megan Kennedy talked with Jake about his writing career as well as his battle with cancer.
As a novelist, I'm curious how different is it writing a traditional versus like a novel setup story or a comic narrative? Like aside from the visuals, when you're setting up a story of like formulaic attributes, plot attributes, how is that different for you as a writer?
It's a little bit different structure-wise in the sense that you need to have a cliffhanger at the end of each page,
right.
Pretty much. You want them to turn the next page and you want them to buy the next issue. When you're writing a novel, that's not necessarily the same format. And so in a lot of ways, like writing a comic script or a TV script even, is a lot of short one-page stories as opposed to a novel where you can wax eloquent for however long you want, as long as it's progressing. Mm-hmm. The story.
So it's a lot more, it sounds like a lot more drama has to be.
Right.
Interesting.
And you have an economy of space too. You can't cram 40 panels onto a comic page to, you know, flesh out your scene. So you've got to be pretty straight to the point.
And efficient.
Efficient, and it's like a train. Once it starts going, you know, you can't really stop it. You can't really take time to bog it down and stop it.
So. That's cool. As a writer, do you have a specific routine that you buy, like certain music that you listen to that gets you in the mood to do your comic writing? Do you have a time of day that you, just as a writer?
I generally write in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
I usually start around 8 or 9 o'clock and then work for, you know, 4 or 5 hours or so, and then break for lunch, and then sometimes go back to it in the afternoon. Sometimes I'm doing other things like, say, podcast interviews.
Yeah.
And I don't listen to music, actually. I think I'm kind of an anomaly that way when it comes to professional writers, because pretty much all of the other professional writers that I've talked to or worked with have something going on in the background, and I can't do that. I don't know what it is about my brain that's wired in such a way that I just can't.
Just distraction?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
That's interesting. I wouldn't have guessed that. I would have expected some really epic metal or something going
yeah.
on.
Yeah.
About your internship on Smallville.
Sure.
So we know that it kind of opened doors for you and that you pitched that idea and it ended up getting you a little bit higher than some of the interns get. But I wondered, for people out there that might be trying to break into the comics world, how was it day-to-day on the internship? Like, what was your day-to-day activities normally that you could expect?
It was 10 years ago, so my day-to-day may not be as clear as it was. And it's very different now, too, because everything's digitally distributed, like the scripts and everything. But when I was there, I was making script copies and filing them in three-ring binders and that sort of thing. But a good percentage of what I did was creative research and discussions with the writing staff.
So it wasn't all just mundane scratching coffee stuff?
Right,
great.
No. And in fact, on the first day that I was there, the executive producers, Al, Al Goff and Miles Miller, who have gone on to write tons of movies, and they're show running the new Charlie's Angel show that's going to be on this fall, and they wrote I Am Number 4, and,
oh, okay.
You know, just a bunch of movies. They also wrote, like, the Justin Bieber movie, but
anyway.
Whatever. They called the writing assistants and me into their office, and they said, we've got 7 episodes left this season, and we want you guys to be able to pitch whatever ideas you have, and Jake, you're the intern, so we want you to, you know, feel like you're a part of this too. And so I went home that night and I came back with a bunch of pitches the next day, and they didn't end up using any of them, but because of that, they had me start writing a lot of the viral marketing that they did.
Uh-huh.
And Smallville was kind of the first show to, like, really use viral marketing, mm-hmm. and it was really like in its nascent state, you know. They had, like, the online newspaper that pretended like the show was real,
right.
And so I was Chloe and I was writing the Smallville Torch,
yeah.
articles, and so doing stuff like that and contributing to the viral marketing was a big chunk of every day. And, yeah.
I mean, it's cool to hear the internship had creative aspects, because you always think
exactly.
of most mundane
exactly.
stuff when you
and,
hear that.
And I did a lot of that mundane mm-hmm. stuff too. Yeah, it was a really good combination. When the internship ended, they kept me writing the viral stuff, and then it transitioned to the other stuff, like the comics and the DVD features, and they had a fan magazine or trading cards, and just all stuff. I worked on projects for all 10 seasons.
That's
of
awesome.
The show. Yeah.
And now that it's wrapped up, how did you feel about the way it ended in the final season and all that stuff?
I thought the final season was really fun.
Good.
Yeah, I had a really good time with it. You know, I will have a soft spot in my heart for Smallville forever, because it launched my career.
Right.
And I was thinking about this morning, actually, just how everything I've done, even the Ender's Game stuff or Ninja Turtles or whatever, you can trace the line right back to Smallville. And if I hadn't done Smallville, none of that other stuff would have happened. And
so you're like Superman kind of a little bit with Smallville.
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. I was dating a girl right before the show premiered that looked a lot like Lana.
Really?
Yeah. So it kind of drove me crazy throughout the run of the show that I would see her, because that relationship ended really, really badly.
Oh.
It's actually kind of what pushed me to get out of town for a bit.
If I could give you $1 billion for your dream project right now, what would you do with them?
I would pay off my cancer bills, first thing. $1 billion for my dream project, what would it be? That's a really good question. I think it would probably be some kind of DC Comics universe. Probably animated TV series that I could run, yeah.
With any specific network you go to for that?
I'd do Cartoon Network for sure. And work with the Warner Brothers animation guys. And it would probably be like Supergirl based, because I love Supergirl. She's like my favorite. So.
And so cool that you got to write one of those comics with her.
Yeah, that was awesome too.
I've written a couple other interviews that you put that was like the favorite project that you've worked on so far. Would you say that's true?
I think it was at the time, but looking back now that I'm a little bit more removed from it, I think my favorite project that I've done is it's one of the Smallville DVD features.
Uh-huh.
I did a History of Green Arrow.
Oh yeah.
That had like Kevin Smith in it, and Mark Hamill narrated it, and like Brad Meltzer.
You got to meet some of
them? Yeah, yeah, and Brad Meltzer, who's my favorite author. Mm-hmm. By far, and he's become a really good friend since that project. So
that's great, and I can't imagine the ties that must have up too, as far as your career like branching out, like you said.
Yeah, I think it, more than anything, it helped me be taken seriously, because
mm-hmm.
it was 30 minutes, and you know, it was just really high quality, and
yeah.
had really solid people from the entertainment industry and from comics talking about Smallville. So.
They mentioned your cancer bills. They might not be familiar with the fact that you are a borderline superhero and fought this illness and
won. I appreciate that.
You definitely are. I know for me, with my dark times, which not even close, but my heroes and books and movies and comics, those are what get me through.
Sure.
I just wondered what heroes might have helped you get through yours, and do you have any words for people that might be going through something similar and how to help them get through what you got through?
Yeah, and just a little background. I for people that don't know, I had Hodgkin's lymphoma, which is a form of cancer. It's a blood cancer, like leukemia. It's similar to leukemia. And I was diagnosed just over 2 years ago, and I've been cancer-free for about 19 months, just over a year and a half. What inspired me to get through it? Well, there was a lot. There were a lot of people. One of my really good friends, and this is another outgrowth of my work on Smallville, is professional wrestler Rob Van Dam.
Really?
Yeah. And his wife had just completed cancer treatment when I was diagnosed, and they both would call periodically just to see how we're doing, you know. And yeah, they were just unbelievably supportive, and the fact that his wife Sonia was a survivor was really, you know, I really looked at that. And you know, as cheesy or cliche or whatever as it is, I had a son that was like 15 months old when I was diagnosed, and so he made it pretty worth fighting for, and my wife as well. Yeah, I just looked up to a lot of survivors. Kevin Hearn, who's a keyboardist for Bare Naked Ladies, mm-hmm. was a survivor too, and he was actually treated here in Salt Lake.
Really?
Yeah. And so I Bare Naked Ladies have been my favorite band since like 1993 when they started. And so I really looked up to him, and actually just as I finished treatment, they performed at the Depot mm-hmm. here in Salt Lake. And he actually sent my wife and me tickets to that show. And
that's great.
Yeah, it was cool. We had a really...
Did you get to meet him after the show or anything?
We didn't, no.
Okay.
No.
That's still so sweet.
Yeah, it was cool. There was something about kind of the Superman ideal mm-hmm. that... And Smallville particularly was really good at showing this, at overcoming... Mm-hmm. The obstacles that stood in your way of becoming Superman, and that's kind of what Smallville was, you know, really doing. And when I was going through treatment, the show, he'd started wearing the S, but not the real suit, just the symbol. And so I kind of related to that, kind of clung to that, you know. So yeah, I don't know if that answers the question.
No, definitely. And I wanted to hear a little bit more about the Hope the Hero Initiative.
Sure.
And if that's still going on, and how, and of course, if anybody wanted to donate to, the bills you're still working on, how they do that, and what's the best way to do that?
Okay. Hope the Hero Initiative is a charitable organization that was set up, the Hero Initiative is the charity organization, and they take care of comic book creators from years gone by, from when nobody really knew that this business was going to be as successful a business as it was, and nobody was making money, and nobody had, you know, health insurance and life insurance and those kinds of things. And so you've got, you know, these creators that are 70, 80 years old now who just can't pay their bills. And so the Hero Initiative reaches out to take care of them. And I did a comic called Hope, the Hero Initiative, that it was an anthology, and there were, I think, 20 stories or something in it, and mine was in there, and the proceeds go to the Hero Initiative.
And that's still for sale everywhere?
I guess. You can just order it through your comic
shop. It wasn't just like a limited edition thing,
though,
so people can still go
for it.
That's such a cool initiative, too. I never think about that, like the ARV industry not having those kind of benefits like that.
Right. The same thing applies to us now. We had health insurance, fortunately, when I was diagnosed, but it was self-employed, and
right.
So, you know, it's we had a really high deductible, and it renewed every year, and so my treatment was $250,000, or almost $300,000 actually. And, the insurance picked up, you know, most of that,
right.
But we still owe about $25,000 on that. And I'm not old enough a comics creator to take advantage of what the Hero Initiative has to offer. But thanks to Brad Meltzer, who I mentioned earlier, a group called Give Forward decided to sponsor a fundraiser for us. And that's actually what they do, is they just sponsor fundraisers. And so you can go to blackfamilycancerfund.org and just donate money, just give us money. We've been
getting, and on your blog I see you use some auctions for different things.
Yeah, we've used some auctions for that too. The cancer fund site, Black Family Cancer Fund site, has been more successful than the auctions were so far, and we've been giving away just kind of cool prizes, like gate prizes.
For more information on Black's current projects, visit jakeblack.com. To donate to his cancer fund, visit blackfamilycancerfund.org. Music in this segment from the Black Keys. The rock duo of Maribadge formed in 2010 and have been making their way across the state, creating a full band sound with just some pedal trickery and only two members. The only goal the two men set was to be a rock band with no gimmick or genre definition of their music. On July 22nd, they will release their self-titled debut album at the Woodshed along with new heirlooms and YYBS. Off their debut album, here's Bread and Butter. We'll be right back. more information on Merit Badge, visit reverbnation.com/meritbadge. Slug's editorial assistant, Esther Moreno, wrote this back in May of 2011. The Texas-based rock band This Will Destroy You have been blowing eardrums since 2005. The band is hard to peg into any one genre. Not quite post-rock, definitely experimental, noisy in all the right ways, and dynamic as a good fuck. This Will Destroy You succeeds in taking the abstract and forming it into beautiful, wordless songs with incredibly wordy titles. Moreno interviewed the band back in April about their music, fan base, and their live shows.
Do you think that being a band that plays solely instrumental music kind of hinders your success at all, or do you think that there's a definite market for that kind of music?
I mean, there's definitely like a niche in the culture that I guess has a fonder appreciation for music like we're making, but I don't know. It goes both ways, because bands like us, you know, now we're starting to have the opportunity to do a little bit of film scoring and things like that maybe a traditionally arranged like pop rock band wouldn't necessarily be able to do. So I don't know, it's just we have different sets of opportunities that occasionally will come our way. I don't obviously, like, you know, like I was saying earlier, we're not going to be the biggest band in the world or anything. I mean, you know, there are like maybe some sorts of like boundaries as far as how like popular our band could become, but that's okay.
I can't think like that.
No, it's okay though. I mean, like, there's something to be said for having your niche, and especially with how the whole music thing is now. You know, having a niche is to me, I think, an advantage. I would say.
Yeah. Why do you think?
Because it you know. If that's how it goes, like, there's people that'll hopefully, if you're doing something worthwhile, will really get behind your music or your art or whatever you're doing, and be loyal supporters of it instead of just like, you know, fucking fair weather fans that are into the flavor of the week, whether it be on Pitchfork or on Spin magazine. Like, there's different levels of flavor of the week. And I mean, both of those publications are cool, and, you know, well, that's great, but, you know, I definitely think that there's a difference between what we're doing and maybe bands that are kind of shooting to follow a current trend or something like that.
So, and I know that I've read a bunch of interviews where you guys really hate being kind of pigeonholed into the post-rock genre. So how would...
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, how would you describe the music that you play?
I think the problem that maybe we have with the post-rock term is that it's just maybe more so a problem with just like having the need to put music in a box and brand it. And I think that it's kind of stupid and unfortunate that that's become such a term that, like, oh, you like post-rock? Well, you like these 10 bands or something.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, but then a lot of these bands sound very different, have different elements, and I don't know, people will even call bands like Tortoise like a post-rock band when it's like they're clearly like incredibly like jazz influenced, and there's not a lot of rock when it comes to their music. It's, you know, it's just a different type of thing. But
yeah.
I don't know. I don't think we really give a shit really about the whole, like, you know, what people want to label the music. That's fine. I mean, people are gonna do that whether we, you know, no matter what we think of it. You know, it's kind of just insignificant to us, I guess.
Well, I guess how would you describe your music exactly?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, hopefully something that's currently, you know, just currently and ever evolving. I mean, I don't think we're shooting to put out the same kinds of records over and over again. And I guess going back to the post-rock thing, you know, a lot of bands that are labeled, you know, maybe in the post-rock genre, I'm not going to name any names or anything, but, like, to me, you know, have been putting out the same record over and over again for years, and that's not something any of us are interested in doing, so, you know, for us, I don't know how I would describe it. The new record is really, it's really dark. It's also really dynamic. Like, it's incredibly quiet at times and incredibly loud at times, and that was something that we were pretty you know, intent on focusing on.
And so what was the concept behind this new album, and what were your influences with it?
As like far as pulling, other music or just in general?
No, just in general, like what were you pulling from to create it?
One major thing is that, you know, some of us in the band dealt with, friends and family, loss of friends and family, you know, mm-hmm. Dying and passing away, and that had a lot to do with it, just kind of dealing a little bit with that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, with the music we were making, that had a lot to do with it. I mean, I guess other than that, like, the four of us that are in the band now have really never made a record together.
Yeah.
So that alone, just like the freshness of that, like being able to write music with, you know, these people that I, you know, have worked with in the past and in different circumstances, but not really as This Will Destroy You. So
mm-hmm.
I think that was a big part of it too. Like, I don't know, it's kind of hard to describe, but musically it's definitely all over the map. I wouldn't really even know where to start with that question, because we all listen to a lot of different things individually, and, you know, it's just kind of all over the place musically.
So you guys recorded this album on your own, right?
No.
You didn't? Okay.
We did parts of it in my studio.
Uh-huh.
Some of the basic elements. Not basic elements in the terms of, like, drums or guitar, really, but, like, little electronic parts and loops and, like, organic things we did in my studio. But we did the majority, you know, 98% of the record, if not more, with a guy named John Congleton, who's done some of the band's previous work.
But you guys didn't have a label, right?
No, we didn't have a label. I guess that is maybe not true. I mean, we still do stuff with Magic Bullet Records, who put out the rest of all the rest of the material, other than a 7-inch that we released like last year.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so we were still doing stuff with them. But yeah, I mean, we were shooting and luckily found a cool couple labels to put out the new record. You know, just to make a record on our own and kind of see what happens, and kind of sending it out to record labels and just getting reactions and stuff.
Yeah. So how did you shop around for a label? Like, what were you looking for?
I mean, we were just like looking for a label that liked the record and liked our band and was like okay with what we were doing, and that's really it. And you know, someone that had a good track record and, you know, well respected, and, you know, before we, you know, signed with, you know, both labels that we signed with, we made sure and, you know, asked everyone we knew, people in other bands that had done stuff with, like, for Suicide Squeeze, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we heard nothing but good things about David, the guy that runs the label, and, you know, when we met him and everything was great, and it's been great. I mean, we just wanted to go with, you know, labels that we felt like we could trust and, you know, would, you know, really, you know, dig what we're doing and, you know, would be supportive of it.
Yeah, that's great. And you decided with Suicide Squeeze, right?
Yeah, Suicide Squeeze is putting out the record everywhere except for Europe. And in Europe, a label called Monotreme is putting it out.
Describe your live show, because it sounds like it'd be a little bit difficult to pull off.
It certainly can be, and the thing is too, what we'll probably be doing on the next tour is playing like off the new record, probably some of the heavier, more full band oriented songs, I guess, instead of maybe some of the other ones for now, while the record's, you know, people are maybe still going to be checking it out. And We also have, like, other records that we want to be playing material from, too, so
yeah.
Hopefully it'll be, like, a good mix of songs. But, I mean, live recently, you know, I feel like it's just, you know, like the records, I guess, or the new record especially, like, very dynamic, very, 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 very loud at points, like, you know, very loud, if
yeah.
I guess, other than that, but, and then also very quiet at points. I think we all really kind of thrive a little bit, or really, you know, dig doing that and really kind of shocking a crowd, or mm-hmm. going from like zero to 100 really fast. And that's fun for us. And I don't know. As far as like describing the show, I guess that's kind of how I would do it. It changes every night, you know.
Yeah. So you guys don't have like a set list for every show, or for
we do, and it'll switch around sometimes. We'll just kind of play what we feel like makes the most sense in an order, since we are, you know, mixing songs from different records. But
yeah.
There are spaces in the set that we, it's not planned or anything. Well, I guess maybe it kind of is, in the sense that there are spaces, you know, between certain songs that are very improvisational, and, you know, different things happen every night, and maybe certain common elements will start to pop out. Like, you know, one of the guys will find something that really works on, you know, their sampler, and like be sampling it and kind of going off of that, riffing off of it or whatever. You know, there's a lot of like room for improvisation in the set, I would say, I guess, you know.
And what about venues? Do you prefer larger ones, or because I feel like you guys would work really well like in an orchestra situation, you know, like in a big hall.
That would be great. And we've gotten to play some like hall type places, not mm-hmm. like maybe huge places, but just, you know, places that are more like set up for listening, I guess, than like a bar sometimes.
Uh-huh.
But you know, really, I think it doesn't matter. We don't care. It's whatever. We like, you know, playing in different types of places, whether, you know, it is a dive bar, or like a pristine, like beautiful hall or something,
yeah.
You know. Both extremes have their perks, I guess, like as far as whether it's like the intimacy with the crowd, or just like huge expansive sound, you know. It's you know, both of those, you know, extremes, you know, are definitely something we like.
For more info about This Will Destroy You, visit facebook.com/thiswilldestroyyou. The Prince interview with This Will Destroy You from May 2011, issue 269, can be read in our archives at slugmag.com. From Slug's daily calendar, here are some of the big events to check out this week. Here to help us out is Slug Magazine's publisher, Angela Brown. Hey, Angela, thanks for taking some time out of your busy schedule, sitting down to talk about the daily calendar.
My pleasure, JP.
Well, do you want to tell people what the daily calendar is, if they're not really familiar?
Yeah, the daily calendar, it's one of my favorite parts of the magazine. It's basically just a free listing of all the cool stuff happening in Salt Lake City. Fun shows and local and national stuff, pretty much just any cool concert calendar that any promoter can get us by our deadline.
Cool. And what's the address to submit listings at?
dailycalendar@slugmag.com. And you do have to get them to us by the 25th of the previous month, but if you do, we'll list them for free.
That's cool. So let's go to Tuesday, July 19th. What's going on that day that you're excited about?
Well, you know, there's actually a band that we've got an interview with in our July issue called The Devil Makes Three, and they're playing up at Red Butte. If you haven't had a chance to check out that venue, it's just a gorgeous, beautiful outdoor amphitheater. They remodeled it a couple years back, and it's good times. It's especially good times watching all of the drunk middle-aged people with their very expensive picnic gear.
Do you ever take the basket yourself?
You know, I do go up there occasionally, and usually I just pack a bunch of PBRs or natties or something like that.
Slug style.
Slug style, yeah. But I do love to make jest at all of the people that do drop a lot of cash for their little wine glass holders that poke in the yard or poke in the grass.
Next day on the calendar there is the 20th of July. It's a Wednesday. What's going on in the evening then?
One of my favorite bars in town, Urban Lounge, is hosting Battles and a local act, Birthquake. They're actually the band who fashioned the theme song for this podcast.
Which is great, and those guys are great.
Those Whitaker brothers, there's three of them in the band, along with a couple friends that come in and play flute and other instruments, but they're always busy. Right now, they are working on a film festival in town, the Salt Lake City Film Festival, and I'm sure we'll be talking about that in a future podcast.
Sounds good. They also joined us on the Pride Float this year.
Sure did.
One of the reasons we won
first place.
Congratulations, by the way.
Yeah, congratulations to you too, JP.
Oh,
you were there.
Thank you. I was riding my bicycle around. And Thursday, July 21st, we have another edition of the Twilight Concert Series coming up at Pioneer Park.
Yeah, the second year at Pioneer Park. And we've got the Decemberists and Typhoon.
And that is taking place at 7 p.m., right?
7 p.m., and Slug is happy to be a sponsor for the third year in a row.
And if people get there early, they can check out some booths, and there's some beer and wine.
Yeah, lots of fun stuff to do there.
And on Friday, of course, happy birthday to James Orm.
It's our Slug Writer's birthday, James Orm. He's actually the author behind the Devil Makes Three interview that we referenced earlier, so I'm sure he'll be celebrating his birthday all week long.
That's cool. Besides that, though, it looks like Mr. Andre Williams is coming to town again.
Yeah, he's the big Friday and Saturday night push. The Garage, two nights in a row. He played here last year. For those of you who are not familiar with Andre Williams, he's... been around the block a number of times. I think he's about in his 80s. I first became familiar with him back in the late 90s when the John Spencer Blues Explosion was his backing band. And he put out a couple records on In the Red, which is a cool garage rock label. Just a real stellar guy, still making music. Coming to Salt Lake City, we're pretty lucky to have him here.
So Sunday's the 24th of July.
Mm-hmm.
Which I hear has some sort of significance in this region. Do you want to fill people in on that?
Yeah, it's the day that Brigham Young first pulled into the valley and declared, this is the place. This is where we're going to settle.
And then the Mormons commenced to rule out all fun in the valley.
You have a Mormon upbringing, don't you, JP?
More than I wanted to admit just now, but I am very familiar with the July 24th holiday.
And for us us locals that are not part of the predominant religion, we like to call it Beer and Pie Day.
I like that a lot better.
Yeah.
Are you making pie?
No, I was going to go over to your house. I thought you were going to make it.
I do actually have some pumpkin pie ready to go, so I'll do that. And a beer.
And what was your address?
There could be crazy people listening. Well, there probably are crazy people listening. Let's just not encourage them. So there's a little preview about what's coming up on our Slug Daily Calendar. For a complete listing of events happening this month, check out the daily calendar at slugmag.com or on the Slug iPhone app, which you can find for free on iTunes.
Or slugmag.com.
Oh, you can download it there?
Yeah.
Cool.
It'll just take, like, it's a link over to iTunes, but...
better than nothing. Thanks for your time today, Angela. We'll check in with you next week on the Daily Calendar.
Can't wait. Watched it all fall apart. Got down on my knees. Oh, how I wanted you to comfort me.
After nearly a year off for solo projects, Will Sartain and Kathy Foy reunited to create new music for the future of the Ghost, bringing in Matt Paulos from Mathematics Etc. on bass and Andrew Sato on keys. In March of 2011, they released their sophomore album, A Blessing for Your Heart, and are re-releasing it this month, along with new album art for fans that may have missed it the first time. On July 22nd, the band will be throwing a re-release show at Kilby Court, along with Spell Talk and The Devil Whale. From the album, here's the title track, A Blessing for Your Heart.
I wanna put a blessing in your heart. And I wanna put a blessing in your heart. And I feel that your love is all around me. And I feel that your love is deep inside of me. I wanna put a blessing in your heart. And I wanna put a blessing in your heart. And I feel that your love is all around me. Your love is deep inside of me. Gaps in my heart.
getting colder. Hold me closer, hold me near. I find the time on this busy planet to cherish you, to love you dear, to see the world with open eyes.
For more information on the band, visit them on facebook.com/thefutureoftheghost. With all the corporate bank bullshit consumers have had to deal with, ranging from unnecessary fees to rising interests and foreclosures, sticking it to the man has never been more satisfying. Slug magazine writer Levi Rounds took it upon himself to do just that by calling up his bank and closing out his account in the only way he could, foul-mouthed and on tape.
I could just try online banking.
Thank you for calling. Para español o prima en nueve. To speak to a telephone banker, press *0. In order to direct your call, please select from the following. For checking, savings, money market. Before we connect you with a telephone banker, please enter your debit card number, account number, or user ID. Please enter the password you selected, followed by the pound key. Your information cannot be accessed at this time.
What the fuck?
For personal accounts, press 1. For business accounts, please hold while we transfer your call to a telephone banker. Your call may be monitored or recorded for quality purposes.
Yeah, ditto.
Welcome. This is Amore Gansby speaking here to assist you. How may I help you with your account today?
What was that?
How may I help you with your account today?
Yeah, I'm just wondering when is going to service me. I've had two $12 fees taken out of my account in the last 2 months, and I don't understand why.
Let me go ahead and double check that here. Sir, can I have your account number, please?
It's
your name, please.
Levi.
And your last name?
Rounds.
And zip code, please?
84111.
All right, thank you, Mr. Rounds. I'm actually showing here that you were charged the $12 fee. It's actually a service fee, sir. What I'm showing here is that what you have is a total checking account. And for having this account, you need to have or you need to meet any of these requirements in order for you not to be charged with the service fee. It's either at least one monthly direct deposit of $500 or more, or a minimum daily balance of $1,500, $5,000 or more average balance or combined average balance, including the other accounts that you have with.
Okay, so so do you charge people with more than $1,500 in their account this $12 fee?
You need to have a minimum daily balance of $1,500, sir. That's a daily balance requirement.
So can I make you a deal? Can you not charge me this fee for 125 months and then we'll be okay?
I'm sorry?
So I've got an idea. If weren't to charge me this fee for 125 months, then I would have $1,500 in my account. Can we do that?
Actually, that's a monthly service fee, Mr. Round, and I'm unable to do that, sir. It's a system-generated transaction, so if the system cannot check or can check that you have not received or you have not met any of these requirements, you will be charged with that $12 fee.
So, does hate poor people?
I'm sorry?
Does hate poor people? Because if you're not charging people with a lot of money, but you're charging people with a little bit of money, that would lead me to believe that you hate poor people. Not you specifically, but your bosses.
I mean, so sorry, sir, but those are the information that I can provide. Because those are the requirements that is needed.
Can you give me reasons why you don't hate poor people?
What do you mean? Is it for or poor people?
Poor, like P-O-O-R. And like I said, not you specifically.
It's not that we hate poor people, sir, but those are the requirements. We actually, even other banks do have that minimum balance requirement.
How is it okay to have those requirements? Is there a specific law where, as a banking institution, if the people that have money in your bank don't have $1,500 a day in their account, where you have to charge them $12? Or is this just something you do to fuck with me?
That's actually just a requirement of the bank.
That's of your bank or of all banks?
Some other banks, I know that they also have a requirement, but I don't have any idea of that. But they also have a requirement.
Okay, I got a question for you. Does think that I'm an absolute moron? Because I think I'm a moron for banking with them. I think I'm a fucking idiot for actually banking with this bank when I know there are other banks out there that wouldn't charge me this. So does think I'm an idiot?
No, it's not that we think that you're like that, sir. It's just that we just have that requirement. Even if you ask other banks, they also have this requirement.
Not all other banks, though. Like, I would be a much smarter person to bank with another bank that doesn't charge me $12 a month. I'm kind of like a wife that gets beat on a daily basis, and the only reason I stay with you is for the security of the picture taking, so I can put my checks into the bank without actually having to go to the bank. I can't think of any other service you provide me that would be fine with you taking $12 from me a month. Are you going to send me a very ugly ladyboy from Thailand with a quarter bottle of snake whiskey Is that coming? I just, for the life of me, I can't figure out why I
would still understand how you feel. Mm-hmm. I do understand, Mr. Rounds, how you feel right now, but it seems that the session is the requirement of the bank. But if you will be able to meet any of those three requirements, you will not be charged of that service fee.
Are you able to meet any of the requirements? Answering phones for a living?
What do you mean?
Do you have a consistent balance of $1,500 in the bank?
I'm actually in the Philippines, Mr. Rounds, so...
Oh, so I gotcha. So would you bank for a bank that charged you $12 a month just to put your money in their vault? Because I can't see a reason.
What do you mean, sir?
Would you bank with a bank that charged you money, that much money, just to put your money in their vault?
If there are actually some other reason on why I am putting money in the bank, Mr. Round.
Is it even legal to charge poor people for being poor? Or is there, like, some kind of law that says can do this? Can they do that?
If that's the bank's requirement, yes, they will be able to do that, sir, charging the account.
Huh.
If you will not be able to meet any of the bank's requirements, yes. Legally, yes, they actually have the right to charge your account, sir, because it is also stated in the documents that you've signed before you open this account.
I never read anything about being charged $12 a month just to have an account with... I didn't receive any email.
If that's the case, Mr. Rounds, what I can suggest, sir, because I do understand your concern, Mr. Rounds, if that's the case, you can just go to the branch where you open the account. They will be able to give you that information or that document. That's the best thing that I can suggest.
All right. You have a nice nice day.
Okay. And have a nice day, too. Thanks for calling.
Yeah,
goodbye.
You're welcome. Thank you for thanking me for calling you and giving you shit.
Thanks for listening to Sound Waves from the Underground. For more information about the music, interviews, and guests from this episode, visit slugmag.com. If you have questions, comments, concerns, or angry thoughts about the show, send us an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com. Or call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and is produced by Gavin Sheehan. Our show's theme and music was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis. Our main logo and art design by T. Doan and technical design by Kate O'Connor. Special thanks to Adam Sherlock and Eric Tomorrow for their help and support. This is JP signing off. Until next time, I need a drink of water.